In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I interviewed Nicola Bolsch. We had a great chat about urbanism and tech. So Nicola is an associate at McGregor Coxall. And we also talked about the intelligent use of data. So thinking about the metrics, why we want to collect certain data, and what it is that we're going to use this data for. So Nicola also shared about a number of different projects across the world, which I found really interesting. So as always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with Smart City experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Nicola, how are you going?
Hi, Zoe, I'm great. How are you?
I am very well. Let's jump straight into this. And can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're passionate about?
I'm a landscape architect and urban designer working at McGregor Coxall. And I work at our UK office, which is one of our sort of new global branches alongside China. So I'm really interested in how we can use data to empower and engage with communities to create long-term meaningful change. So not just the idea of using data, but in really questioning about how we can use it to test and change cities for the better in a way that actually empowers and works with the communities.
That's awesome. So what kind of sparked your interest in this smart city space?
I think it was about 2015 or 2016, I did a competition with the ULI for George Street 2020 with a friend of mine, Albert Keyson, who's a amazing architect actually in Sydney. And it was one of those young leaders competition that we actually won the comp. But it was sort of the process of that competition that sparked my interest in this area, because we wanted to do some sort of intervention for the street that was really based on flexibility, adaptability, and kind of intelligent feedback. And one of the things that we really wanted to do was to get an idea of what people wanted to see for the street. So we thought it was interesting having a competition for the street, but with no public sort of feedback of what the public wanted to see. And so we started thinking about holding like quasi sort of small mini consultations for the competition. But then we thought that once we'd done that, everything that we designed would still be quite static. So we started looking into other ways of achieving adaptability. And that was when we spoke to a bunch of people. One was Bruce Taper of Kinesis. And they started to have a look at how IoT could actually start to facilitate some of these processes. And so we ended up designing this sort of adaptable kit of parts street furniture system with an analytic overlay in the pavement that would could allow the configurations of the street to be sort of tested and the basis of success. And so it was really, it ended up being a smart city proposition for the street. And I think off the back of that, that was really new at the time, even then, because it was always like 2015, 2016. And since then, I've sort of been looking into, you know, proposing more solutions like that within McGregor Coxall, but also then I undertook a Byra Hadley to start looking at the deployment of that sort of thing and whether or not how it's actually happening, what's happening on the ground, what are the limitations, and whether or not it's actually being done in a meaningful way, because we're starting to see the rollout of a lot of these things. And so it's pretty interesting and exciting times. We're in such a beta phase. So that's sort of where it came from. And now it's kind of taken more of a merger role with my job in the practice.
Yeah, cool. So what is a smart city to you?
I'm a little bit kind of strict, I think, in terms of the smart city definition. And I know not everybody is. And I think that I come from that perspective because I believe that if we start being really flexible in how we define things, that it enables them sometimes to be used for purposes that might not necessarily be appropriate, and that if we need new definitions, we can kind of develop them along the way. So I think a smart city is one that intelligently uses and responds to data, particularly live data. So that to me is where a smart city sits, and it's really highly related to ICT, IoT, and the tech side of things. We have other definitions for cities and intelligent cities that are better in terms of livability and green infrastructure. And I think that we've spent so much time in urbanism really crafting and defining the lessons that we've learnt about an urban environment that it's really dangerous to then say, call something smart cities and try and make it encompass everything. So I prefer to just treat it as an overlay that kind of complements everything else, and then we work on those lessons that we've learned for the past, like particularly since the 1960s, I think.
Cool. So why do you think this smart city concept is so important?
I don't think it's the concept that's important in itself. I think that smart cities is a kind of broad brushstroke term that will become possibly just become obsolete. Like, I really think that this is just the use of another tool or technology to problem solve. And I think that that's a really exciting thing that people shouldn't shy away from or see as tacky or even label differently, because I think it makes it a lot less approachable then. So I think that, like, as we move through, just because of we're going to have tech more and more in our lives, smart cities are just going to become a conversation about cities again. So for me, it's the what's exciting is the use of new tools to achieve and solve even old problems, you know.
Cool. So I know you're based in the UK. So how do you think that the UK is kind of embracing this smart city concept?
Well, our kind of approach in the UK is really interesting. And so last year we won the London Smart City competition, and that was for a project that we called Smart Carpet, which was sort of this idea of taking that notion of street adaptability even further and looking at that, what that meant in terms of transport and community engagement. So people could almost like Minecraft sort of design their own space, both in terms of the surface treatment and the furniture arrangement, and then test it. So that was sort of like a digital Minecraft space for the city. So it was kind of very sci-fi and high tech, all really achievable. We're not really sure where that's going at the moment, but and the UK, I think, is doing some really interesting things. Where we're at, which is in Bristol currently, is actually the UK's highest ranked smartest city, and the way they approach the smart city movement, I think, is a really, really positive direction, because they do it from a perspective of always having digital inclusion activities, making it really citizen centric. So this idea of putting the community and the people in the center, and then looking at their issues and their advocacy, and then raising the question of what can technology do to help achieve outcomes on top of that. So I think that that's a really positive direction that Bristol has gone down, that I think a lot of other cities haven't. It's really, I think it's a city by city basis and more kind of case by case basis as well. Like, you see a lot of smart city deployments at the moment, which really look like shopping lists. So they've gone, yeah, we want smart parking, we want smart lighting, I think those products are, yes, they're solving a very specific problem, but they really are just another product on the street that is helping, you know, reduce energy or something like that. I don't think that that's a holistic approach. And I think that where we're moving at the moment is that particular technology companies hopefully will start employing a lot more people who are engaged academically and professionally in the urban environment, to really start to think about smart cities from a much more holistic and integrated perspective, rather than the development and deployment of products.
Yeah, so that kind of leads on to this next question. How do you think we can do that integration piece better across the different disciplines, so government and industries, academia, that kind of thing?
It is interesting because it takes a kind of first looking at how smart city projects are funded and driven today, which, as you know, is more through PPP, so public-private partnerships. So they're funding, a lot of them are funding matching agreements, which I think is accessible in some terms, but not in others. I think that our education institutions have a huge role in smart cities and will hopefully start to grow. I think a better cross-disciplinary response means looking at more creative ways to bring in maybe smaller practices and people doing interesting things in technology rather than relying on the big players. I think the industry is really mega player centric at the moment. And I'm hoping that that will start to change. And I think that what happens is as soon as you go down that smaller trajectory where you start looking at maybe more testing, more experimental sort of direction with this sort of stuff rather than just saying going to one of the key large deployment players and large tech companies, that you are going to get a lot more collaboration anyway. So I think that that's one direction. But I also think that the way that we start to fund these projects, that we might start to need to have a look at different ways of initiating and funding these types of projects to make them accessible to more people, really. And then we'll start to really sort of see diversity. So when you look at it from a community engagement perspective, that can be even as simple as some cities have gone down the route of having workshops and spaces where people can actually go to learn about how to create their own digital platforms or learn about digital privacy. And so that's kind of more grassroots, almost skill sharing development of communities so that they can then take on technology in an empowered way. So I think that there's a few things that need to shift, but I think it will happen. I just think it's just happening slower than I'd like to see.
Yeah, cool. So let's talk about some of the projects and things that you're currently working on.
So recently, I mean, I did touch on smart carpet, which I think is probably one of the larger ones that we've been looking at. We have a bit of a consortium that we're working on, that which is Umbrellion, PubGen, and Momentum Transport in the UK. So that has a whole bunch of different applications, and it can be adapted and changed depending on place specificity. So in Croydon, we proposed a really similar concept that was kind of like a mobile habitable botanic garden that filtered the air through these planters that could be used to curate event spaces. But and the idea for that was that due to transport domination of that area in particular, it was looking at almost like a micro response to air quality for respite. So it's more like those sort of interventions are, you know, speculative and fun and all about testing and seeing what the physical side of the public domain can do. Then there's more of the conceptual side. So we're starting to speak to a lot more universities and work with a lot more universities to start to understand how different parameters within, particularly from a sustainability perspective, can be quantified in the urban environment and then changed in terms of design deployment. And I think that that's really where a lot of things will start to go. So one's about interaction and engagement, and the other one is about, you know, like the testing of, like, let's say, you know, how you can do micro air quality mitigation for people at the ground to scale through green infrastructure interventions. So it's less, at the moment we're in this sort of process where we're really starting to look in how we can bring this sort of stuff in to our projects and who we can partner with in order to achieve that. So I mean, we've done, McGregor Coxwell has always had a really big focus on this idea that we can measure and quantify and look at a system's response to the urban environment through a lot of the BioCity research that Adrian McGregor head up. So this is sort of like just furthering that really from a technology side of things. And then looking at deploying that in kind of across all our projects really. So it's less project specific and more, you know, with everything that we do, how can we bring that extra layer of intelligence, and is there an opportunity to embed that into the work that we do?
Yeah, cool. So do you take a kind of global approach as well, to like learning from, you know, other countries and even other cities that have, you know, done a similar thing or are trying to do the same thing or like doing a completely different thing? Is that really important, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's hugely important. So last year I did a BioHadley Travelling Scholarship with the Architecture Registration Board, and that was essentially that to look at some different cities in terms of how they've actually deployed IoT in their public spaces. So it's very much is very much public space oriented, and sort of see how they've done it and learn from it. And so I actually went to the US, and I think because there's a lot of similarities with the US and Australia in terms of how this stuff is being deployed and could be deployed, and went to Chicago and New York. So those were really looking into two particular projects. One was the Array of Things, which is a project in Chicago, which is essentially Internet of Things deployment of a whole series of sensors to work as almost like a city Fitbit. So measuring things like air quality, pedestrian movement, traffic movement, a lot of the things that you actually see as almost sort of standard IoT measurements, but in a really comprehensive way. And what's really interesting about how they've done it is really been how they've approached people, data privacy and advocacy. So off the bat, they did a consultation on data privacy policy. They've done heaps of workshops with high schools as to how to build their own sensors. They do a community, so communities can submit and say, we want this issue monitored in this space, and then they review it. And so the actual deployment of these nodes is based on different research groups and different communities saying, hey, we want one of these things here to monitor this, and this is why. So I think that adds like this extra really layer of meaning to what we're actually getting out of that project. So I spoke to quite a lot of people in Chicago at the city and at the Argonne Research Laboratory, and then I went to New York and started looking at the sort of aftermath of the deployment of Link NYC on a large scale, because it's seen really as a Wi-Fi kind of high-speed Wi-Fi public service distribution, but really it is IoT. I mean, those things are kitted out with so many different sensors, environmental sensors, they've got cameras, they've got Wi-Fi kind of tracking capabilities. And even though that they're not advertised almost as an IoT project, it's about, you know, getting high-speed Wi-Fi to the city. It's a really interesting case study in many ways of what not to do, because the data then is all privately owned. And also these things that start to be just kind of placed in the urban environment in a way that is not really supporting the social spatial outcomes of the cities. So it's really interesting what happened there is they rolled these out, and then they had a problem with no sort of kind of social infrastructure around these kiosks. But then what started happening is because they had free browsing, they actually had people watching pornography on the streets, and gathering around these things and having sort of large scale, you know, loitering. So it's almost like activating but undesirable activating, which is a really interesting question of like, you know, what do you start to do? So then all of the plans to start to think about how you could use these kiosks to perform some sort of social activation or interesting public space, well, kind of went out the window. So if you walk around New York, you'll see people sitting on the pavement charging their phone next to these things. And so I think that there's like a lot of these different projects, particularly when we start to look at physical infrastructure and people and data privacy, when you actually really start to engage with the most complex parameter of the city, and that is people, then we start to see these really, really interesting questions that come up. And each of those has had completely different funding mechanisms. Obviously, one was deployed by largely funded by Alphabet, so Sidewalk Labs, which is a subsidiary to Google, really, and was like freely deployed, and then they use advertising and sort of data mining to target different spaces, really, based on information about those areas. And so you just can see that in private industry, we're getting more and more and more of this urban knowledge. And so I find that really fascinating, because that came about as this idea of this really almost philanthropic idea of let's give, you know, people who can't access high speed Wi-Fi, access to, a resource and something that people really need in this day and age to successfully get by and engage with society. And yet there's a lot of stuff on the back of that that are kind of unforeseen consequences and that we could really think about in a lot more rigor. And I think that that is slowly starting to happen, but it's really important that we look at this stuff beyond the this is what they're doing from a cool techie perspective, and really start to dig underneath and say, okay, what haven't we done well? What can we do better? You know, is this the right approach? Because it is so new that we are really learning from it. And the more you look into it, the more you realize how few people are actually deploying this in a really successful way. It's still really experimental at this point in time.
Oh, so interesting to hear about that. Let's talk about emerging trends. What do you think the ones are that people aren't talking about enough at the moment?
I think that there's a really interesting area with place metrics that's starting to develop, particularly within the placemaking communities. So these are platforms that start to really try and think about both quantitative and qualitative frameworks for neighborhoods in a more defining way, so that we can start to have different types of measurements of spaces that aren't your usual kind of frameworks that you do. So it's based more on a place auditing kind of process that you bring in a placemaker to do and view. And then obviously that's coupled with a lot more community-centric activity and basis. But I really think that what's really interesting is there's a parallel between technology and understanding how people engage with space and how that changes over time. So people like Kylie Legg of Place Partners, and there's another business called PlaceScore, who are doing really interesting things in terms of starting to, you know, ask a few questions about what are these other metrics and measurements. And Gale Architects are starting to engage with that as well. And I think that when we start to look at that, we can get a little bit more experimental in terms of what we are measuring. Right now, we're looking at technology and being like, what can we measure? Cool, let's put this in here. I think it's really a shift in terms of what do we want to measure and why, and then seeing whether or not technology can do that, so, and what it can pick up on. And so there's interesting things like, you know, new indexes. So, for example, the percentage of women as an indication of the safety of a park or a space, or so really, really interesting things like that. And this ability to start to have a look at the cultural parameters and start to really kind of think about and play with more qualitative aspects of space. The problem with that side of things is that even though it's really interesting, it's less likely to gain funding because it's more difficult to stick an economic figure next to it. And I think that that's really relevant for a lot of vision-oriented projects, that they're a lot less definable in terms of a qualitative framework, in terms of what the benefits that you get out of it are. And what I'm really excited to hopefully see is that to start to change. So Peter Jones from UCL recently did a project with the EU called Create, which is all about urban mobility and looking at cities that have taken a more vehicle dominant and personal mobile approach to the city in comparison to cities that have looked at a more of an active transport way for movement and maybe more of a place-centric kind of direction in their development. And what's really interesting is that if you chart out their GDP, you can actually see that the ones that have become more place-centric have actually, in comparison to those that have more private vehicle ownership, actually have a higher GDP. And so, and it's really interesting because you can see these different arcs of how these places progress over time. But if you take a step back and look at that from the perspective of I need to do a business case right now, I need to quantify these figures now. How much traffic reduction is it going to make? What's the impact of that going to be on the economy? It's a lot easier to do that from a more private automobile oriented perspective than it is from a vision oriented perspective. And yet if we start to map these things over time, we can really start to see that, you know, in the long run, that's actually not the case at all. And what I'm really interested to see is researchers looking into that sort of stuff, starting to see that come about and starting to really try to put some numbers and quantify some of these things that have really been more seen as almost vision oriented. And I think that would be really powerful when we start to see that happening more and more. So it's kind of a little bit all over the place because you've got a lot of higher education institutions that are really working on this stuff. And I think in the next few years, particularly, we're really going to see this start to seep out into professional practice. So yeah, that's what I'm really excited about.
Yeah, cool. It's been so awesome to talk to you. I've learnt heaps and my brain is like in overdrive thinking about all the different projects. I just have one last question for you.
Yep.
Which is, how can people connect with you?
So I'm available across all social media. On LinkedIn, you can just find me at Nicola Bolsch, so NicolaBalch. Or by looking up the staff under McGregor Coxall. So that's awesome. McGregorCoxall. And on Twitter, I'm Nix Bolsch, so NixBalch. And I think that's about it, really. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll put all the links in the show notes so people can connect with you.
Great. And my email is just my first name, nicola.bolsch@mcgregorcoxall.com, if you want to contact me personally.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for speaking with me. It's been great. And, it's been a great chat. And I feel like we have a few more conversations to have.
Yeah, that would be really good.
Cool. Well, thanks again. And we'll talk.
All right. Thanks, Zoe.
See you later.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook @smartcitypod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.